Hello and welcome. I'm Barbara Jean Myers, and you're tuned to a special program called History Speaks, Voices from Mineral Center. History Speaks is a new segment on WTIP that explores our region's rich history. Today's program focuses on Mineral Center, an early pioneer settler village in Cook County. Thanks for tuning in, and we sincerely hope you enjoy listening.
A big part of my heart went with the demise of Birchwood School in Mineral Center in the northeastern corner of Minnesota. This school was built by a hardy group of pioneer settlers, including my grandfather, Johns Woodard. During three phases of my life history, Birchwood School attained almost landmark stature. First of all, my mother, Blanche Woodard, was the first teacher of Birchwood School in 1911-1912. Secondly, I attended that school during my elementary years and have many happy memories of those days, some of which I will later relate. Thirdly, after high school and college years, I returned to Mineral Center and taught in 1935 and 37, the last 2 years Birchwood School was in operation, before being torn down for salvage lumber. So the brief 26-year history of Birchwood School will remain on these few pages of my inadequate efforts. How I wish I could impart to you the true essence of the nostalgic affection I felt for that beloved school. But words are meager tools.
Gertrude Linnell grew up in Cook County, in a pioneer town known as Mineral Center. Although not much is left of the town these days, it was once a bustling settler village, full of homesteaders, many of whom came from Wisconsin in search of a better life. Mineral Center is located on the Grand Portage Indian Reservation, a few miles inland from Lake Superior. And for a period of time, in the early 1900s, it was inhabited by white settlers. In 1889, Congress passed the Nelson Act. This legislation opened up vast tracts of tribal land to non-native settlers. Under the act, the reservation was broken up. Individual tribal members were each assigned an 80-acre allotment. Remaining reservation lands were bought by the government and made available as homesteads to whites. An estimated 16,000 acres of Grand Portage tribal land was given out to non-tribal members. Through this process, the community known as Mineral Center was established. In 2001, Cook County Historical Society Director Pat Zinkman interviewed Gertrude about her life, memories, and experiences living and coming of age in the pioneer town.
A few of the early pioneers that really built Mineral Center were disgusted that the logging was getting poor in Wisconsin, and so they moved up to, or took a chance on moving up to what is now Mineral Center. And now how they heard of it, I have no idea. J.M. Woodard, that's my grandfather,
right.
Ruby's father and my mother's, from Rice Lake, Wisconsin, and Mr. M.S. Green from Black River Falls, Wisconsin, had heard of the wealth of timber, minerals, and fishing possibilities to be found there. Malcolm Linnell, M.S. Green's nephew, Clyde and Earl Roberts came in the fall of 1909.
Okay.
And looked over the land which had been opened for homesteading on this reservation. On their way back to Wisconsin, they filed on homesteading while in Duluth. Mm-hmm. So they actually owned the land. The stipulation was that they must settle there and build a house of some sort.
The town got its name from one of the early settlers.
M.S. Green, who was Malcolm Linnell's uncle, was always sure there was nickel or copper or some of the lesser metals up there. And he even did a little prospecting on his property to check it out. He chose a homestead which he thought was rich in minerals.
Yeah.
They never did find any minerals of any amount.
Yeah.
And so, but they called it Mineral Center because Melvin thought that it was going to be a boom town someday, rich in minerals.
The town's life was relatively brief. Settlers began coming to the area in the early 1900s. 30 or so years later, nearly everyone was gone, and the town died. But during Mineral Center's peak years, somewhere between 200 and 300 people lived and worked in the area.
I'm Nona Smith, and we moved from Mineral Center in 1936. I was one of the one-room schoolhouse pupils.
Nona Smith was born and raised in Mineral Center. She now lives in Grand Marais. She was 12 when her family left the community, and she remembers life there well.
Well, we didn't have running water. We didn't have electricity. There was none of that up there, so we had kerosene lamps and gas lamps and outhouses. But we kept warm by wood stoves.
Life in Mineral Center was rustic. The town itself was isolated. Roads in the area were very limited and extremely rough.
Well, I didn't, you know, from Mineral Center to get to Grand Marais, I very seldom did that. And that was, what, 32 miles? I probably got to Grand Marais around four times before, from the time before we moved. Because you just didn't do it. Not, you know, you got what you needed. You didn't. We had catalogs to order out of in those days, you know, so you could order. And there was a post office at Grandpa's store. So you didn't just trot someplace anytime you wanted to.
The town had a general store owned by Peter Linnell. The store also served as the post office. During the early years, mail came in by ship, on the steamer America. In the winter, it was delivered by horses three times a week. During the town's later years, a gas station and garage opened. The community had two churches, a Congregational church and a Seventh-day Adventist church.
Well, everybody had a garden for their own use and everything. It's how you subsisted in those days with hunting, which was not exactly forbidden in those days either. You could, and then it was only 6 miles or so to Grand Portage, where the lake was. Mm-hmm. And my dad, for one, used to fish for a man by the name of Pete Gagne. Down there. And you just earned your living any way you could in those days. Mm-hmm. Times were so bad, and they had come from Wisconsin dirt poor, and just enough money to file on a homestead, and so they had to make a living, and they had good-sized families.
Many settlers engaged in woods work, like logging. Some people farmed, raising goats and cattle. Children attended one of three small country schools in the area: the Seventh-day Adventist School, the Cloverdale School, or the Birchwood School. Of the schools, Birchwood was the first to open in 1911. It was built on a cleared pasture.
Well, we had, it was one room, and we had a big heater in the corner with kind of a shelter around it, metal. So it was confined there, and the teacher would have to build a fire in the morning, and we froze. And we walked to school a lot, and then in the wintertime they had a little sleigh with horses that a sleigh with a top, you know, enclosed, and then they had a little stove right in the middle of it with sand around, so they could, you could stay warm. And if you got real cold, you had to get out and run. Keep warm.
Gertrude Linnell attended the school as a child and went on to become the last teacher the school would have before it was torn down in 1937.
We had two little outhouses, his and hers, with little wooden sidewalks going down there, which were never shoveled in the winter. We just beat a path down there because there was always someone going throughout the day. There was a bubbler fountain, and the janitor filled it in the morning. And then at noon, he came up and replenished it, or else a couple of the boys would go down at a nearby spring. I don't know that it was tested for purity or not,
sure,
but it was the best tasting water you ever tasted. It was from a nice cold spring, and it was a little bubbler fountain that they poured big crockery container in the top, and then you pushed a little button and
the water came out,
bubbled up.
Nona Smith had Gertrude as a teacher.
Was she a good teacher?
Mm-hmm. She was a very good teacher.
What do you remember about her teaching?
She was the only one that punished me. She was. She made me stand up in front with gum on my nose. And she slapped my hand with her ruler. And I know none of the other teachers did that. I was always a good kid. I don't know how come she did that.
You must have gotten into some trouble.
I must have.
What happened?
I was chewing gum, and that's why I had to stand up there. And of course, you know, we didn't have much gum, so I wasn't going to throw it away. And I don't know, I must have been talking, because my voice carried and I couldn't even whisper without the teachers hearing me. So that's what must have been. I couldn't have been cheating because nobody around me would tell me the answer.
Nona says she has fond memories of the one-room country schoolhouse.
But it was just, you know, it was nice being with the whole, you knew everybody and everybody was your friend and you played together at recess. And, yeah, a lot different when you're just, well, it's just like one big family.
The atmosphere in the little one-room Birchwood School was that of a close-knit community. Bonds between children were strong. Kids looked out for one another. So much so that Nona doesn't recall there ever being any bullies.
You know, one kid protected another, so one wouldn't get away with that kind of stuff. As long as the older kids were nice, well, it was all right to keep the younger ones in line. But I can't say there was any bullies.
Teaching in a one-room country school was a challenge.
I mean, when you figure these one-room school and how a teacher has to, seems like it would be hard to teach that than, say, a class, because you have to learn things from first grade up to eight. And that's, of course, you have to go by the books. It was really interesting. Person don't realize what it's like unless you've done it, but then after you've done it, it seems so natural. But to think that you only have 2 years of school, college, and then you're teaching these 8 grades, that's quite a challenge. Gertrude was good. She was good. I had the teacher we had between them. She was good, too. Because, you know, when you're a kid, you respect your teacher.
Gertrude jumped into her position at the Mineral Center School after attending just 2 years of teaching school. She obtained her teaching certificate in Duluth.
My parents had an awful time even sending me to school, you know, because it was tough times and everything. By that time, they were still in Mineral Center, and I worked for my room and board, and they sent me money as they could, which was very, very difficult. But you got out of and taught as soon as you were able. I would love to have gotten my degree at that time, but because I was allowed to teach on a certificate, I thought, well, I better get out and help my dad.
When Gertrude took the teaching post at the Birchwood School, she wasn't much older than some of her students. She earned just $75 a month and paid 15 of that for room and board. Although the one-room country schoolhouse was a challenging environment for both teachers and students, it also offered a unique reward, community.
Well, I don't know. It's more of a, like a family type. It isn't you go for your one grade and that, and you go as a whole group. And it was kind of nice being... You can watch out for the younger kids, or the older kids will watch out for you, and there wasn't all a competition. Yeah.
Life was never easy in the pioneer town of Mineral Center. Hardy as people were, the Great Depression took its toll.
Because I ended up, when we left, with depression, you know. So that was no work much for anybody. And
some folks lost their land because they didn't have enough money to pay their taxes. Others left to pursue opportunities elsewhere. The population began to dwindle. Just as national policy influenced the town's formation with the passage of the Nelson Act, legislation also contributed to the end of the town's life. In 1934, the U.S. government passed legislation called the Indian Reorganization Act. This act slowed the allotment process that created homestead communities on tribal lands in the late 1800s. The government began to buy back some of the tribal land that had been given out to non-Indian homesteaders.
So what happened to Mineral Center? What made it disappear?
Because all the families had sold their land. Mm-hmm. And there was really no need to stay any longer. There was better opportunities elsewhere, so they just moved out. And then they had this wonderful chance to sell their land to the government. Almost everybody took advantage of that.
Yeah.
And so that's how it got to be ghost town.
The Nelson Act broke up the land base of the Grand Portage Band, but due to a lot of hard work, the tribe has been able to restore between 96 and 98% of the originally established reservation. Not much is left these days of the old Mineral Center town. The general store, the school, and the churches have all been torn down. A cemetery remains, and the place lives on in memory. History Speaks is a production of the WTIP News and Public Affairs Department. Special thanks to Pat Zenkman and the Cook County Historical Society, Kathy Quinn, John Morin, Dave Cooper and the Grand Portage National Monument, Tim Suk, Nona Smith, and the late Gertrude Linnell. This program was funded in part by a grant from the Cook County Community Fund.